Welcome to Running, the Municipal Election Candidate Forum hosted by Len Anderson. Tonight we'll meet the candidates for the Anchorage School Board and review the area-wide ballot propositions. Now here's Len Anderson.
Well, welcome to Running again. Last night, KAKM and KSKA presented the candidates in the six assembly races. Tonight we turn to the school board for races for seat C and seat D. Now I'd like to point out one difference between the assembly races and the school board races. Everyone in the municipality votes in the school board races. They are not divided into districts as the assembly candidates face. So we all will have a chance to vote for our first two candidates here from seat E, Mr. Pat Higgins and Mr. Bob Griffin. We're going to begin with a 30-second or a brief introduction, and we'll start with Mr. Higgins.
Thank you. My name is Pat Higgins, and I am the incumbent, and I want to start by thanking KAKM for this opportunity. I have served on the school board 3 years, and my focus has been the graduation rates, dropout rates, career vocational education. I'm a strong supporter of charter schools and optional programs. All three of my children attended optional programs. There's been a lot of misinformation during this campaign, and I urge you to visit my website to get information directly in regards to it, and feel free to call me at 952-5871. Thank you.
Mr. Griffin.
Howdy, I'm Bob Griffin, and I'm running for school board because, you know, we're staffed and funded to be one of the best school districts on planet Earth, but we've squandered our resources on places that really aren't relevant to the best student outcomes. We really need to refocus our resources back into the classrooms where they do the most good. We have this love affair with facilities that is just beyond belief, and we need to refocus those resources back into the classrooms to have the best outcomes for our students. My family's been in Alaska 100 years, and I am very worried about the sustainability of the school district budget for my grandchildren and future generations of my family that'll be here in Alaska.
Is the budget misdirected or too large or a combination?
Well, mostly misdirected. The school board members, as most people know, do not have really much control over the actual size of the school board budget. It's largely controlled by the appropriations from the assembly, the state, and the federal government. The school board really only has control over the recommendations for capital improvements and also over the allocation of where those resources go.
Mr. Higgins.
Well, I think we have to redirect resources currently in the budget to achieve our goals. There are a lot of changes that have been made during the last 3 years that I've been on the board. We've cut district admin 16%, and we've redirected money back into programs that get results. I think classrooms are very important, but I also think you have to look and say, what results are you getting? We had 30% reduction in dropouts rates in the last 3 years. We've had a 10.5% increase in graduation rates. Of those that are not graduating in that 70%, those that are not graduating, 6 out of 10 are continuing in school to either get their diploma or completing their certificate of achievement. I look at it from a standpoint of what we're getting for results. That's what the key issue is to me, and the academic achievements that we need to improve on. And so it's not necessarily the size of the budget, it's what we're getting out of the money that we are spending.
Would it be fair to say, Mr. Griffin, you're not altogether satisfied with the results?
No, I'm not satisfied with the results. You know, the SBA test scores since 2006 and 2007 are down between 2% and 4% and across every category. And, you know, for the amount of money that the budget has been increasing, it's a problem. One of the big items is class sizes. The school board, for 2 years in a row, has passed budgets, even though the budgets have increased by greater than the rate of inflation, have passed budgets that increase the class sizes. And it's just unfathomable that we would, you know, not focus those resources where they do the most good. There's many, many places around the country where they limit class sizes to 20 kids down in the lower levels. You know, our class sizes are much too large. We need to refocus them, you know, back in that direction.
If I'm correct, I think while you voted for the budget as it stands, you were one of three who voted against the class size?
That's right. There was a 4-3 vote to increase classroom sizes over, the majority won, and we increased classroom sizes. The year before that, there was an adjustment that I spoke out against that was approved, and then we basically reversed it. We had 20 teachers that were cut. We've added 24 back. So it hasn't been a reduction in teachers. And a lot of the teachers that are being increased, you don't see on the budget in the same category because they're special education teachers, and we have over a 10-year period, a 30% increase in special ed students. And so you've got additional staffing there. So you have kids coming out as well.
Any more on the budget you'd like to say?
You know, there's a lot of things that need to be fixed on the budget. Just going through some obvious things that jump out at me was the cell phone charges, our telephone charges. When I'm not a budget specialist, but it seems odd to me that we spent $2.9 million, we're budgeted for $2.9 million next year for phone charges when we're only budgeted $1.4 million for textbooks. That works out to almost $800 per teacher if you divide it per teacher that we're spending on phone charges, and we're only spending $30.11 per student textbooks. I don't know, anybody really between the age of 14 and 80 that doesn't already have a cell phone. I don't understand why such low-hanging fruit like that isn't addressed in the budget. And we went down the route of eliminating teaching positions, some of them that we brought back, but why we don't go after things like that more aggressively than increasing class sizes at the drop of a hat. Mr. Higgins did, in fact, vote... for the budget, though, that increased he was the swing vote that passed the budget. If he was so worried about keeping the class sizes down as his campaign last year, whose class sizes so large children can't learn, for 2 years in a row he's been part of the bloc that has voted a budget that has increased class sizes.
An important area that has grown and grown has been career and technical training. And when you mentioned textbooks, that's what kind of prompts this. That's more expensive on the average from the beginning when the school district first started to play with the idea, because hands-on learning is more costly than textbook learning. What do you see as the future of that? I notice right now the school board is very keen on it because quite frankly, in the bonds, we've managed to slip that into all three bonds, and one is based purely on the facilities. What are we going to do as things get tighter for costs?
Well, you're going to have to redirect resources where it gets the best results. Career technology is critical to keeping a number of the students that otherwise would drop out stay in school. They provide them a direction of where they're going to go when they graduate from high school. It keeps them interested in it. A lot of people learn hands-on. It is an essential part. We have not maintained that area when it was gutted somewhat in the 90s because of funding issues, and a lot of the vocational technical was cut back. And in 2001, it hasn't been expanded. My first year on the board, I made some pretty passionate pleas to really put the focus on career technology and bring that back in. And we're headed in that direction. But every decision we make is going to make a decision that we have to allocate resources between choices. And vocational education to me is something the public wants, is something I am passionate about. And you're right, it's in all three bonds. We have one totally dedicated to it. We have service is now different than it was 3 years ago, in part because of me. And we have a gym that will be able to be set up as a career technology center. And we have money in the extension of Building Lives for a career technology center at West Enrollment. And I think that we have to have every child graduating ready to move on to higher education, and that's going to lead to a career. And career vocational education is critical to that success.
This is one of the things that Pat and I agree on pretty wholeheartedly. you know, the Alaska, especially with our resource development economy that we have, that vocational education is something that needs to be brought back. I remember when I was in the Anchorage School District as a kid, we, you know, had metal shop and wood shop and those types of things available. And how we ever got away from that, you know, based upon our, you know, I've said many times, you know, Alaska needs, you know, more welders than we do poets. Nothing against poets, but it's just that the type of economy that we have, and it's one of the things that I think leads to our high dropout rate and our really still unacceptable graduation rate. 30% of our kids aren't graduating because a lot of times I don't think they have appropriate avenues. And this is one thing that, you know, Pat and I agree on. Though, his contribution, and I'll acknowledge his contribution to increasing the graduation rate, but, you know, really fundamentally we've gone from a horrible graduation rate to a well below average graduation rate. And there's still a lot of room to grow in that.
As far as allocations are concerned, we could be coming up on a similar budget strain, maybe even worse.
Worse.
We managed to save, I believe, 82 positions this year by a one-time Federal Jobs Act. We got into the fund balance and sources for preserving some library and assistants and aides and certainly the school secretaries. As I've mentioned before, I've seen you at a number of board meetings over there, and so you have a knowledge here, and so I'm going to say for both of you, and where specifically do you see us reallocating? I mean, it's going to be quite a... Either one of you who perhaps have the misfortune to have to make these decisions as you do the 2012-2013 budget, where are you going to get that?
Well,
those millions.
If I can address that, you know, this last budget that was passed was actually kind of disappointing. I think the school board kind of ducked the issue and is going to make it so much more difficult for, you know, further school board budgets to go down those roads. There is a lot of things that really need to be fixed as far as the process. If you look at the long range plan, the 6-year plan, there's going to be a budget gap between $57 million and $101 million a year of an additional revenue that we're going to need to come up to maintain our current staffing levels. And I think it's a sad fact of life that we're probably not going to be able to afford as many of those positions. So we have to focus like a laser beam on the people who contribute the most to the student outcomes. We have only 13 students per teacher, and for some reason we have so many of our educators that are allocated into administrative positions and things like that. We need to bring them back out of the woodwork and back into the classroom. The other thing we need to look at is the capacity. The school district is not operating at peak capacity. Since the charter schools have opened, we've lost about 2,800 kids out of the elementary school system, and we've continued to build one more elementary school, and we've accumulated a site this year for an additional elementary school. And that's not the way the trend lines are growing. We're not growing. We don't need more space. What we need to do is start looking at consolidating maybe some of our schools and redistricting, a hard thing to do, admittedly. But we've done all the easy things. It's time to start to look at some of the hard things to increase the efficiency of the district for the outcome of our students and really, honestly, for the fairness of the taxpayers.
Do you see us not being able to fill all the teacher positions next year?
I don't see how we could not fill all the teachers' positions. Just in the AA bargaining, you know, there's 3,690 teachers, and so we have plenty of educators available. I say there's only 13 students per educator. There's only 7 students per employee at the Anchorage School District. The Center for Education Statistics shows that the amount of support staff we have is quite a bit above the national average. That it's an excruciating thing to do to have to let people go, but I don't see the staff being as big in the outgoing years as it has been. We've had a The student population has stagnated. Fundamentally, the neighborhood school population is the same as it was in the 1993 school year. And since the year 2000, we've increased the staff members by 1,003 staff members. It's not a shared sacrifice compared to what's going on in the city. The city, since 2000, has only added 4 positions to the police department, even though we've added more than 29,000 people to the municipality. It really hasn't been a shared sacrifice. And half of our property taxes going to the school district only counts for about 30% of the budget, but half of the money going to the school district puts a huge burden on the taxpayers, and we have some of the highest property taxes in the country.
Well, I don't want to lose focus on the fact that the mission of the school district is to educate all children for success in life. And everything that we spend should be focused on that and not necessarily on a number of statistics that in some cases are accurate, in some cases may not be. When it comes to looking at the budget, we need to focus in on areas that's not going to impact the outcomes. And in some cases, the outcomes are going to give us the savings we need long term. And I'll give you an example. One of the most expensive areas we have is special education. And we have 40% of our children entering kindergarten not prepared to learn at kindergarten. Now, if you're like me, when I heard that, I said, what do you need at kindergarten? But if you don't have language skills, if you don't have a lot of developmental type of things that you would expect at that age, they're not ready for kindergarten to be able to acquire what needs to be taught. And so as those children come in and we advance them year after year and they fall 2 years behind, they're falling into the category of eligible for special education services, which is very expensive. And we're putting more and more resources into there. In the country, the special education went up 30% in a 10-year period. It's out of control. But if we do a better job in the classroom, if we start addressing things at an earlier age, we'll put less resources in there long term. Short term, we have a serious problem. The job stimulus bill that we were given this year really gave us a chance to delay some tough cuts outside the classroom that are going to be on the table again. But it gives us one more year to look at the results that are associated with those positions and see whether or not the career guides are impacting things. The career coaches, the graduation coaches, when we've got a 30% reduction in dropout, is a big number. 340 kids in the Anchorage Schools area, that's what it represents. So I don't want to lose focus of that. I think that we're looking at some serious cuts next year. I have not been supported this year of cutting, increasing classroom sizes by cutting the teachers. I don't anticipate being in favor of that next year. We've got to cut other areas. Got to cut administration. We've done that in the past. We've got a proposal now that will cut purchasing and accounts payable by automating that. I'm chair of the audit committee. I chaired that review, and we've adopting those policies today. So we're moving in that right direction. But no, I'm not going to be supportive of increasing classroom sizes. We got a $7.2 million jobs bill. We don't know what the state's going to provide us this year or next, and that may alleviate the problem in part. But I don't know where we're going to end up. But cutting classrooms or increasing classroom sizes and cutting teachers is not my solution.
If I can take this thread a little bit farther, I think the facilities piece is the thing that I'd really like to hit on, because even though we haven't approved any bonds for a long time, our debt service continues to increase year after year. We're up to $90 million, $750 million in current outstanding bond debt. I think we really need to because there's only so much that the community will support. I think we have to get back into that mode of could be better is the enemy of good enough. And we don't need to have our schools, fancy schools don't produce better outcomes. We see that in the charter schools. We've seen that at Eagle Academy, operating out of a used car lot, has one of the best, has some of the best SBA scores in the district. The kids have to walk across a little parking lot to go to their tiny little playground, but those programs cost half the of what they do per student for the neighborhood schools, and yet the school district it's a board policy, they don't support transportation for those programs, even though the state pays based upon the average daily membership $407 a year. They get no support from the school board for transportation, and they get very little support for facilities, things that are available from the school district. They charge them for, and the lack of support for these programs has has not allowed them to expand to their natural market limits. Basically, there's 1,068 kids that are on the waiting list for charter and alternative programs because there's obviously a huge demand out there. I think that the school board needs to support transportation for these alternative programs, and I think they need to do a better job of making facilities available for them.
So you think the alternative programs, including AVAIL, SEARCH, and those that kind of help students who have had a long time problems with the traditional classrooms, that's worth the money?
Absolutely, because those programs are programs that not every kid learns the same, and the vast majority of our system is structured from top down. This is what you'll do, and with uniformity across. And there's so many different types of learning styles, and the Northern Lights ABC and Polaris very close together, popular programs, but they couldn't be more different in the style of learning. Not every kid is lined up to go to an ABC program, or it's. The more choices we can have, it's a good thing. A lot of choices is a good thing, yes.
You have a quick response for that before I delve into a little bit of student demographics?
There's a lot of stuff that was raised, everything from linking bonds to operating budget, which doesn't link, and there was a few other issues there. But just in regards to charter and optional programs, I'm a big supporter. I'll tell you, SAVE is a good example of a program that is being very successful in reaching kids. We had 144 graduates this year. That is a huge number. And these are kids that were behind academically and going forward. I do want to comment on the 30% that are not graduating. 6 out of 10 are continuing to get their degree or a diploma or a certificate of achievement. So the idea that they're lost, they're not in that category. We're chasing after them. We have programs, in fact, for them. And every year that those children stay in school, those do, they count as somebody that didn't graduate. So we have a special ed child that stays until 22, and every year they're in, they count as someone that didn't graduate again. So we're recounting some numbers over again, but that still not means that we're successful. We need to be successful with everyone. And these optional programs are critical. They get parents involved. And parents are very heavily involved in the charter schools and the optional programs. They really are. And that selects kids that right there have something going for them right off the bat. And that's great. And we need to expand them. The only charter school that has come in front of us that talked about it was something out of Landmark High School at a Landmark College in Vermont. And when they came forward, it wasn't ready, but I made it clear I will champion that, and I do support it. It's going to be a great program, a great addition to Anchorage. It's going to deal with ADD, dyslexic, and other types of programs. And to have that type of charter school in Anchorage is going to be fantastic.
What about allocating some of the elementary schools, our excess capacity to elementary schools, and turning them into charter schools? We have plenty of elementary schools because of the 2,800 kids that we've lost since the charter schools that have started. We have plenty of schools that are operating, near 70% capacity, and that's just not efficient. We could actually generate some revenue to lease those facilities out to supporting them with transportation. Again, that's a school board choice that it's not in statute or anything. The school board has made a conscious choice to not support the charter schools with transportation.
Well, the transportation cost for special ed is 14 times more expensive than it is for the regular children, because you've got special ed students that may be in Goodwood that are attending school in the North and Southport, and we have to keep those up if they're homeless. We have obligations there, and it's very expensive. You've got you have charter schools from all over the district. The cost of that would be tremendous. We do not have any additional funds provided for any particular child. About 30,000 children are eligible to take the buses, some or not, because they live close by. And we are not given, and that money was decided based upon how much does it cost to provide transportation throughout your schools and divide it by the number of schools. They didn't say a higher number. MATSU had a higher number than that, and so they have a much bigger number that they were allowed to do, and the idea was that we could manage it effectively, go for it.
I'm not inferring that we should use school buses to drive the charter school kids around. I just make that money available to the charter schools, and they can figure out some method, private van pools and things like that. If you were at Rickleshule today, and you've probably seen when they line up and when school starts and when school leaves, there's that long line of cars with all the exhaust fumes and things like that. That is something, again, it's a school board decision that we could use that those resources and help those kids out. I'm not recommending that we provide school buses because they're spread all over the place, but there's opportunities to have pickup centers around, and it would open the opportunities to so many more economically disadvantaged kids, which right now those are the main groups that are being shut out from the charter schools.
Okay, well, one brief response, and then I'm going to insert a question here in the remaining time.
We're not provided additional funds for them. We are given money to be able to run buses through subdivision to pick up all the children. If five kids decide not to ride the bus, we don't have any less cost. So it's not a flexible cost that we have extra money. And it's not going to increase the availability, which is a bigger issue, of how many spaces we have available in charter schools and optional programs. That's what I want to see developed. I want to see that expanded so that it's not a transportation issue. It's an access issue is my highest priority.
Okay. I think as both as candidates, you share something with everyone who goes into their schools in the morning or their jobs, that their education requires a vision. What is your vision for the kindergartners who are going today? What do you see as the classrooms they will be experiencing when they're 12th graders?
Okay, can I tackle that one?
Sure,
first? Yeah.
But make sure you save time for your opponent.
I will. Okay, the vision I see is the leveraging technology. There's a really good book Liberating Learning that I read recently, and a couple other books along the same lines. But by leveraging technology and actually having computers available, basically there should be a computer workstation at every kid's desk. We've squandered our resources, so we don't have the money to do those type of things. But the amazing things that can happen, the collaborative opportunities that arrive when every kid has a computer workstation, the ability of the teachers to track how well the students are doing because the computers collect that data and who needs to be, who is falling behind, who's getting ahead. I think that is the classroom of the future, and it's the direction that we need to get.
Mr. Higgins in here.
Well, 21st century education to me is the ability to go out in the Library of Congress, find the information you need, bring it back, process it, and apply it. And so the processing skills are critical. Anchorage is leading the country almost in social emotional learning. In fact, there's other states out there referring to Anchorage doing great with that. So that's going to be part of the component. Part of the component is clearly the impact technology is going to have. We need a blended education. You're going to have computers along with teachers that will allow teachers to spend more time with the child.
Thank you. These are our two candidates, Mr. Pat Higgins, the incumbent, and Mr. Bob Griffin. There is a third candidate, Dustin Darden. I want to thank you both for coming this evening and taking the time to appear in the running and also to being candidates. Coming right up after our short break, the candidates for seat D.